And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, joined as always by Jason Hayes, pastor and friend. Jason, it is Wednesday.
It is.
And this morning, we had the pleasure of hosting the Bob Bell Show.
Which was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
I feel bad.
It feels like it just was a bit ago.
I feel bad for a lot of the listeners of WRJZ that they have listened to us for now 3 hours today. Or at least if they listened for 2 hours this morning, they may be now turning the dial.
Not these guys again.
No, please don't do this to us.
Yeah, also,
it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. And it's always, clear. It's just like when a pastor ask somebody else to preach on a Sunday morning. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. And so the fact that Bob trusts us to step in and take care of his show is pretty amazing. The show that he's done for 70 plus years.
Okay, what it's not 70. We joked on air with him even. I think it's more like 20-something.
I think 25, I believe.
But I think there's also a pretty big assumption. The reason I kind of left that little awkward pause there is I think it's a pretty big assumption that he actually – that he's given it to us because he trusts us. I think he may have just given it to us because he was desperate.
It could have been everybody else said no.
Correct, which
and,
is much more – And we're
at the bottom of his
much
list.
More
certainly,
likely.
Certainly could be. I'm more of a assume the best kind of guy.
I appreciate that about you.
You know, half a glass half full.
Yeah, man.
That's more my style.
Not so much me is what you're seeming to imply.
Not so much the way you look at things from a pastor's standpoint of.
So it's a big
all
week.
Bad. It is a big week. It's Mother's Day.
How are your preparations coming for Mother's
Day? They're good.
Day?
They're good. I'm married to a mom.
Yep.
And, I have a mom.
Yep.
And my mother-in-law lives with me.
Yep. You are abounding in motherhood.
I am. I work with 14 women at Hope, and
correct.
A lot of them are mamas.
Yep.
And so it's good. I say all that to say I'm not prepared at all.
No, I was going to say, so you've at least just assessed the situation.
That I have a lot of moms around
me. It does not mean
me.
That you're prepared for the situation.
Yeah, and so it's interesting what to do. But in line with that, we also have – the royal family.
A big birth.
Yeah. I mean, they just had a little boy.
Is that appropriate? Can you see
a big birth?
Sure. I don't know if that's such a dude thing. I don't know, a big birth.
I don't know if you would look at a mom who just had a baby.
Had a
that was
birth.
One big birth.
Yeah. I don't know if that would be.
Man, that's the biggest birth I've ever seen. I don't think we would say those things to people, but I think we would say them and we would think that's normal and then they would cry and walk out
right.
And we would go, what happened?
Yeah,
I don't understand. And then our wives would go, you cannot say that was the biggest birth you'd ever seen.
So if we were to take these two significant events of the week, which is Mother's Day and this royal birth, and we were to create a bit of a mashup here.
Yeah.
Do you see how culturally relevant
you
I was
relevant.
When I used that term?
You are
hashtag
relevant.
Mashup.
Yeah. It's good.
When we would do that, what do we believe are the things that a mother receives in the royal family on Mother's Day?
I have no
because they have all the gems and gold and crowns
that's fact.
They need, right?
That's fact. They have rooms full of gold.
Right.
I believe.
I think that's exactly how it works.
They have horse-drawn chariots. They have Mercedes and
is there a slipper? Is there a slipper
Rolls
in there
Royces,
that slides onto
all of those things?
A daughter's foot. I don't.
All
I
of
may
those
be.
Things.
I may be confusing.
They
stories.
Wear hats.
Yes.
And everywhere they walk, people play trumpets.
Right.
I think that's what happens. And so
white horses.
So
everywhere.
Here's the thing. Like for our spouses, for our moms, we want to give them. Typically, we want them to relax, so we may give them a spa day,
right,
or something like that.
Yep.
So when it comes to the royal family and materially you have everything, do you give them what they don't have, which is say like, hey, go mow the yard.
Right.
Like would that be relaxing
yeah.
to them? Because they live in what some people would say paradise. Would for them, would you go the opposite direction and go, hey, this Mother's Day, you're cooking, you're cleaning, you're doing all the things you normally
don't
do.
I foresee a lot of that stuff happening.
You don't think that?
So in this morning show, we actually had, kind of opened up the phone lines and talked a bit about, best gifts that you have either received or worst gifts you've received. But is there a gift that you would define as a best gift that you've given?
That I've
like
given.
A gift that you really felt proud about? And I don't even mean so much for mothers. I just I mean just any gift that you've given, you're like, man, I did good on this.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
I'm not real good at I'm not good at that.
I feel pretty good about this one.
Yeah.
And then we'll transition not so seamlessly towards today's topic. But this past year, a guy that just means a lot to me, kind of a mentor in my life, a guy that's battled some health issues and things of that sort, I wanted to give him a gift for kind of an important thing that was happening in his life. And I actually, and he's a huge fan of Spurgeon, Prince of Preachers, you know.
He's
and I actually found through this historical document website that everything's authenticated and things of that sort, a 2-page document of sermon notes from a message that he had. And I bought it. And again, it comes, you know, sealed and authenticated and all that stuff and gifted it to him. And this guy has a whole lot of stuff. He doesn't really need any, you know, anything monetary. And man, it like moved him.
Yeah.
And I was thought to myself, I'm the best friend a guy could ever
ask for. And you made copies, you gave him the copy and you kept the original.
I thought, wow, I am a remarkable human.
Yeah. Well, and that's what it's about.
No, I didn't think that, but I did, man. It was fun to be able to bless somebody in that way.
Yeah. One year a buddy of mine growing up, he pretty much was like another one of the Wood Boys.
Yeah.
And one year at Christmas, we were out of high school. So we were, you know, adults at that point. We were sitting around at Christmas and my brothers, we got together and we thought, look, we'll give him, fake adoption papers to make it official. Like you're one of us. You're one of the Wood Boys.
Right.
You're part of the Wood family. It's kind of a joke, but we thought that'd be sweet too.
Yeah.
And so, we made it up, framed it. My mom's a notary. She notarized it, which I don't know. It's probably
abuse of her powers.
I don't even know what really
notaries
do. In fact,
if someone wants to be just kind of heading that direction.
I don't understand why that little stamp makes a difference. Yeah. But okay. I probably just offended a lot of notaries. But as
we just lost our notary.
So my buddy opens this gift and he looks down. We're all sitting there. We've been opening presents. He looks down and he reads it and he starts sobbing.
Oh man.
Like uncontrollably, like not just a tear slowly coming down the cheek, but like shaking, sobbing. Because it moved him so much. And we were,
then did you feel embarrassed?
We didn't know what to do.
These aren't real documents.
Yeah, then it was like, they're not, like, you're not, it's not real.
Yeah, how old was he?
Like, we were out of high school.
Okay, so, I mean, he didn't need to be adopted.
No, he didn't need to be, no. And he had, I loved his parents. He had parents, you know, like, he had good parents. And so, but it was one of those moments where you're like, wow, that really made a difference.
You've had a meaningful, continually meaningful friendship with him for all these years. Unfortunately, his parents now hate you.
Yeah, his parents were mad.
Yeah, they were like,
they had to give up their parental rights
to adopt our child.
Yeah. No, it was, his parents, you know, side story, when my parents were out of town, I wanted my ear pierced. I was 15.
Oh, wow.
And his mom signed for me.
Oh, wow.
And my mom was not happy.
No, I would imagine
not. Was not happy at that at all.
So but, maybe a point of conflict there.
Maybe.
And if I could just seamlessly transition today.
Good. That's good.
We are talking about
conflict. Conflict and disagreements.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the reality that we live in this fallen world. Genesis 3, sin comes into the world. We talk about that sin begat sin, but sin really begat fallenness. And fallenness includes all kinds of things, whether it's insecurities, whether it is pain, suffering, sickness, all the stuff. But it also includes conflict. And one of the great mysteries that I have seen in recent years is how really good, even godly people can fall at odds with one another.
Yeah.
And I just believe that is obviously the work of the enemy. It is obviously the result of sin in the world. But it's tragic. Mm-hmm. It's tragic when you see good, godly people who in many ways, I think still are even attempting to walk with Christ and surrender their life to Christ, but yet find themselves at odds and unfortunately have found themselves in a spot that feels like it can't be reconciled. Yeah. And so today we're going to talk a bit about conflict resolution, conflicts that are worth stepping into, yeah. conflicts that should absolutely be avoided. We're just going to talk a bit about that today.
Well, and I think it's important too that we look into this and understand that that some of us, if we're honest, are disagreeable people.
Correct.
We like it.
Correct.
We feed off of it. We disagree on everything. And yep. it doesn't matter what it's about. If someone says the sky is blue, we argue with them.
Right.
And so there's a part of it, and that's a sinful part of us that wants to always be right, that wants to, that enjoys the conflict.
We enjoy correcting.
Yeah.
And not building up.
Yeah.
And there's a point where correction is appropriate times, but it's for the sake of edification.
Yeah.
It's not for the sake of me just getting a one up on somebody.
Yeah. When my children do something wrong and I correct them, it's in the hopes that they won't do that again.
Right.
But as adults, at times what we do is we correct because we want that person to know we know more, we're
right.
better, they're not as good.
Right.
And so it creates that, that disagreement. So do you think, and we've had conversations, in past shows about,
We only talk on air.
Yeah.
So
that's it.
So
that's the only conversations we have. So we really try to put as much as we can in these hour conversations. It makes for good radio.
Right, right.
But as we look at, the internet and social media, do you think that social media has birthed a more disagreeable culture than in, say, years past? Or have we always been, you know, it's like when people say, man, politics is worse than it's ever been. And I'm like, well, Aaron Burr shot Alexander
right.
Hamilton.
Right.
So, like, we're not dueling in the streets. And at one time, before internet was a thing, before electric, like,
right.
they were shooting at each other in the street to solve disagreements.
Right. While I do not overly enjoy someone giving me unsolicited, random correction
yeah.
on Twitter. I value that more than someone inviting me into a joust.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, something.
I challenge you to a duel.
Yeah, something.
And then smack you with a glove.
Right. I'm like, I think probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I do think that we've always had this bent in us. Again, I mean, in fact, if you actually look at there is science that we've even talked about on air that talks about how our brains have a negative
yeah.
bent. They are drawn towards negativity
and outrage
and things of that
yeah.
sort. And so I think that that's a result of, again, the sin nature in us. I do believe that this current generation and era that we live in probably exposes those things mm-hmm. more. It just makes them more known and maybe gives us a tad easier outlet to display those things or to kind of unleash those things.
Well, even when we listen to shows and people that we agree with, what drives us to that? It is the fact that we all disagree about the same thing.
Yeah.
And so we listen to those because we can talk about the disagreements that we have about the other folks on the other side. And that's what drives a lot of things. I mean, that's probably why you listen to this show. So we'll be back. Turn your love around. And I don't know if people know this or not. This is the album that you came out with back in the late 80s, early
yeah,
90s.
Yeah, I was four, and I just kind of felt like there was a lot of creativity kind of welling up inside of me, and I needed
yeah.
an outlet.
And
so I looked to Mom, and I was like, Mom, it's time to cut an album.
We need to turn our love around.
Right.
And you
right.
did.
And
boy,
so
did
I was
you.
Like, Mom, we could talk about this, and you could
yeah.
discipline me, and I could cry, or I could just cut an album
yeah.
and do
so
this
get
song.
That, get that cassette player. And what yeah. I would encourage you, if you're listening to this live right now, I hope you have your cassette player out, and you're recording
correct.
It.
Yeah. I think that's still the technology
yeah.
people use, right?
I mean, what... I remember my brother, one of the toughest dudes I know, back in the day, Grease was on.
Oh, wow.
And he brought down his radio. And then every time a song came on, he hit record so he would have the soundtrack.
Nice. There's a great little segment on, the Need to Breathe live album. They mm-hmm. released a live album
yeah.
not too long ago. And, it, of course, it's giving you kind of all the transitions yeah. between songs that they have. I think they recorded at the Ryman.
I think so, yeah.
And in fact, they talk about how that they were raised in a Christian school and everyone kind of cheers. And he was like, well, hold on. And he describes them because it's he and his brother and then the other band members. And he describes them as kind of the, you know, the wild kids is what he said. And he said that their mother would only allow them to listen to Christian music. Mm-hmm. So what they would do, though, is they would tape cassettes, Christian cassettes.
Like Amy Grant cassettes.
Yes. Yep. In fact, use that exact example. Yep. And what they would do is they would record over those cassettes, and then they would sell them at their Christian school. Yep. And so I believe he, I'm trying to remember what the example was, but yeah, it was like a recording over Amy Grant.
With Tone
Like Sir Mix-a-Lot. Yeah. I think Sir he said Mix-a-Lot. Sir Mix-a-Lot, something like that. And so, yeah. My first ever cassette I owned, New Kids on the Block.
Come on.
And I got it. Yep. I listened to it for like 2 days. And I went to a soccer practice, and a friend of mine told me that New Kids on the Block were only liked by girls.
Oh.
And apparently I was that shapeable and insecure.
Threw it away.
That I tossed it in the trash can.
Wow.
Yeah.
I still.
That is a conflict.
I still in my drawer in my home. Have a MC Hammer cassette.
Oh, nice.
He was amazing.
Nice.
Hammer don't hurt him. That's good stuff.
It's
good
too
stuff.
Legit to quit.
Amazing stuff.
Things that we need to quit.
This is the way we roll.
Unhealthy conflict.
Yeah, and so as we think about that, recently we have seen, this is kind of in the Christian news, an author, a popular progressive Christian writer,
so
Rachel Held Evans, 37 years old, went into the hospital a couple weeks ago, had the flu and some other issues. But she, even going into the hospital, she tweeted out, hey, please pray for me, not feeling well. The biggest issue I have with this is I'm going to miss the Game of Thrones season. But not thinking anything major, 37 with the flu, surely she's going to be fine.
Yeah, and a mother
of young kids and passed away over the weekend.
So tragic.
And so, this is what kind of brought us to the disagreements. There's a lot of Christians that disagree on a number of different things. And Rachel Held Evans was one of those on social media that would get in some back and forths with Russell Moore, with Beth Moore, with other folks about, I went back and forth with her on some abortion topics and issues because we disagreed on certain things. But what we find is when she passes away, you find some folks that'll say things like, we disagreed on everything, but I'm sorry that she's passed. And it's sad to me that in our culture, we have to put that little, preface at the beginning.
As if my sincere condolences have to immediately mean an affirmation of everything that person believed or stood for. That's just makes you think a lot. You know, it has made us reflect a bit this week to think of, you know, how have we lost this ability to have conflict with other people that doesn't make them feel like enemies?
Yeah.
You know, and because when we respond in ways like this, again, what a terrible tragedy that this woman has gone, you know, has left the earth far too soon.
Yeah.
And yet we feel the need to throw these things out here. Mm-hmm. And I think it does again speak towards the idea that we have somehow managed to create a situation that we cannot have conflict with someone and still like them.
Yeah.
Or still appreciate something that they could be bringing to others. And so we just want to talk today about conflict and how we address conflict. I mean, how do you handle this? I mean, you, for a living, talk about life.
Yeah.
And it is a polarizing subject.
Yep.
And I have to believe that there are a number of folks that probably do not stand exactly where you stand, and yet you can still be amicable with them. You can still even have a respect for them. And yet there would also be a number of folks that I would imagine have demonized you because you don't have an opinion that they do.
Yeah.
And how do you personally balance all
of that?
I think
it's a struggle. It's a struggle for me because it's, I spend a lot of time thinking through responses, and so what you end up doing is telling people what you're against all the time instead of telling people what you're for.
Right.
And so I struggle with that. I'm against abortion.
Right.
Full-fledged, no ifs, ands, or buts. Like I'm fully against it. And so, but I don't want to become the against abortion guy.
Right.
I'm more for life. I love life, and I think life deserves protection. And the most vulnerable life is that life that's in the womb, and we need to speak out, and we need to make sure. But sometimes if we're not careful, our message becomes one of negativity and not one of what we affirm. And so right. I don't have any qualms about saying I'm against abortion, but I would much rather be known for the guy that celebrates and is for every single life.
Right.
And that's
right.
hard. It's hard to do because we live in a time where even with Miss Evans passing, we have a lot of people that can't wait to get that article up to celebrate her life, but also go, these are all the disagreements I had with her.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, maybe we need to wait. You know, the mantra, oh, too soon, hashtag too soon.
Yep.
Well, there's something to that. The reason we say that is because maybe we need to give a break.
And it happens all the time. I mean, we are unfortunately here dealing with another school shooting this week. What a tragic event.
Right.
And immediately it becomes politicized. And immediately,
there's not any grace time, any time at all.
Yeah, there's no opportunity to grieve, to value life, to consider these things. It immediately has to become an issue. It immediately has to become, this is a gun issue.
Yeah.
This is a mental health issue.
Yeah.
This is a, and I do understand for some, they are trying to steward opportunities of influence, meaning these are the moments they're being asked to come on the radio. These are the moments they're being asked to be a host or to be a guest on a television show. And so I get that they are feeling like they need to steward an opportunity to push something that they deeply believe in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, what happens is we've lost people in it at times. I'll tell you one thing that I find to be especially concerning. You know, when it comes to something like life, I mean, this is something that both you and I deeply mm-hmm. care about. It is deeply rooted down into who we are. And so it will be at least difficult to probably have a really long-standing, vibrant, wonderful friendship with someone who just stands diabolically opposed to these things for us.
Right.
And that would be, I mean, as much as we joke about it, it's not easy to have a deep relationship with someone who hates our team. More or less hates an issue that we really care about. What's really unfortunate, and we'll talk about this when we come back from the break, is when we see people find division among each other and really find conflict among each other over really petty things.
Yeah.
And that happens all too often. We'll talk about it after the break.
So today's topic is disagreements, conflict, how we as Christians should handle that. Should we feed into the narrative of what kind of cable news has become, where it's just everything is about conflict and arguing? I mean, my hands aren't clean of this. I participate in a lot of it on Twitter. I enjoy a good troll and those type things. And so how can we get to a place where we go, it's one thing to argue on abortion and life. It's one thing to argue on, believe in Jesus, don't believe in Jesus.
Right.
It's another thing to be super petty and allow for relationships to be broken because someone doesn't like your Vols.
Right.
Or because someone doesn't mow their grass in the right way.
And it's not always so much that it is a personal insult.
Right.
You know, that's one thing that you and I both are not proponents of an overly soft culture.
We
are strong believers in that too many people too often get their feelings hurt way too easily, you know.
Yeah.
And so don't misconstrue what I'm going to say, but I do think it's not always just this personal offense. There are sometimes that you're just like, man, you're not saying this necessarily about me, but like this, every time I talk to you, do you have to make a pot shot at my team or against my party or against, against something that you know, just that connects to me or people around me. And it just eventually just wears on you. And you're like, I simply find myself in discord. We talk about this actually a lot as a church staff. Now, let me tell you the context we talk about it. We're dealing, in fact, we'll break some news right now. Okay. I'm just going to break some news. Right now I'm breaking the news to you as a partner of Shoreline Church, but we are going to have a schedule change this summer.
All right. Well, I'm already in disagreement.
We're going to have a schedule change this summer, and the primary reason we're doing that is because we need to create some space for children.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have three gatherings on Sunday morning, and as you know, it kind of feels like people have voted mostly with their feet and with their attendance that for young families, 9:45, which is our middle hour, is the most ideal time. Yeah. And so we need to make some schedule changes to kind of more evenly distribute children. And we talk about the reason that this happens is very rarely do people walk away from a church. I would say in our context, I don't know how many people are ever going to walk away from our church because they were offended. Now, we believe that the gospel can be offensive, but I think also most people that have stayed around our fellowship long enough know this is what you're going to get. You're going to get the truth. You're going to get the gospel. We're not going to miss topics and avoid hot subjects. Right. We're going to talk about the hard stuff. But what happens is eventually, speaking about maybe this children deal, people just get tired. Mm-hmm. They get tired of like, oh, it was a battle to get my child checked in this week. It was a battle to find a parking spot. It was a battle to do X, Y, and Z. And before you knew it, they just kind of felt tired, and tired kind of exhaustion led to disconnect. Mm-hmm. And then disconnect said, oh, we're going to go and try something else. And I'm afraid that to a certain degree, that's what happens with our relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm exhausted from hearing you. Every time I'm around you, this happens, or you've got to say this, or you've got to do this, or maybe they feel that about me. I've got to express my opinion on this. I mean, kind of things, again, unsolicited. And it's not necessarily that one big moment happens. You know, man, I can think of people that I've kind of fallen out of favor with over the years that the reconciliation has needed to occur. It wasn't necessarily that I just said one stupid thing. It's more of a number of things kind of happened. And eventually it was just like, I don't want to be around that guy. I don't want to be a part of this organization with them, or I don't want to unify in this with them. And I think that's something we have to consider. Are we not just people that are kind of avoiding the big blow-ups, but we really living a life day in and day out with our speech, with our actions, and everything we do that is attracting people to the gospel and attracting people to the Jesus that hopefully is inside of us?
Yeah, and that's the hard part. I think for some of us, it's one or two things. I mean, Scripture says love your neighbor, but it doesn't say you have to be best of friends with everybody around you. We have different personalities. There's going to be different people that connect on different things that are, look, I have a dumb amount of knowledge when it comes to beards and how to take care of beards.
Yes, you do.
Not a lot of people want to talk about that or care about that. And I get it. Like, I get it completely.
I've noticed a little flip on the end of the lips. It's like a little flip right there. I've noticed
it has a mind of its own sometimes. Yeah. and it was dark this morning when I was trying to get everything ready.
But, as you know, also this morning I came in when we did the early show early this morning for Bob, and I still had a line on my face from
like
the pillow.
You laid on the pillow
and
all
I'd
the way
up
here
for like an hour.
It was probably your headgear, but that's another thing. So as we look into this, you don't have to be best of friends with everybody, and you're not going to connect with everybody. But do you want to be known as the disagreeable person?
Right.
For a long time, that was me. I really work on that because I enjoy politics. I enjoy religion. I enjoy things that a lot of the culture don't want to talk about.
Right.
And so as we get into that, I used to, and my wife would help me get through this. We would be in conversations and somebody would just say something about, the weather, and I would bring up how man-made climate change wasn't a thing, and they were like, all I said was,
I thought it was
going
to be sunny tomorrow.
Or, and why are you, or somebody would be driving a Prius, and I would have to make a comment, or somebody would, you know, just these little things that, or somebody would make a joke about, man, these kids are, you know, just, I'm so tired. And I would go, children are a blessing. Why would you?
Yeah, why would you say
why
that?
Would you say, like, why would you act like they're a burden?
Yeah, you're like.
And, you know, people don't want to be around.
No, haven't seen
around that,
that
all
I'm
the
glad
time.
I'm glad I missed that iteration of Andrew Wood.
And so we, you know, recognizing that we have to find a place where we can, and recognize that in our own lives that, look, I'm kind of disagreeable for no reason. And I'm messing up relationships. Like, I have family members. We disagree on everything.
Right.
When it comes to, I mean, not just petty stuff, but very much foundational gospel stuff, pro-life stuff.
Right.
But they're family.
Right.
Like, and so I'm going to a wedding in this month, and I'm going to be around a lot of family members, and I'm going to hug them and love on them because they're family. Even though we disagree on these things, those things we disagree on should not change the way we interact.
Right. No, I would agree. And I think we have to be careful too of just the things that we kind of constantly dump into our head. We're going to, you know, in our next segment, we'll actually talk about some things that we can do to resolve conflict. But I think there's also a point of things we can just do to avoid conflict. And one is just giving a kind of a healthy audit of what is the tone of our, of our language. I have to be careful. We joke about it all the time. That, you know, my love language, and I think Andrew's love language is sarcasm. You know, you guys get a pretty healthy, you know, a portion of that here on the air, but we do that more for, in this context, for humor but I have to be careful that doesn't just carry off into every conversation I have. And people are like, man, I can't be serious with this guy or, I mean,
are people you just met.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow,
he's
a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be careful with those things. I also have to be really careful of just kind of the constant banter I allow into my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a sports talk show. I think I've shared this in the past, but I was listening to a sports talk show a couple years ago, and we obviously both love talk radio and I love sports talk radio. I love talking about the Vols, and I don't call in. I'm a longtime listener, never caller,
right.
And I love listening to that. But basically one caller for all practical purposes said, we'll be a good team this year if we play better, we score more points and keep the other team from scoring points. It was basically have a better offense and a better defense.
That's profound.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It stood out to me that the host of the show, like, just went all in on the caller. And it was like, how could, there's nothing you could argue with. You are exactly in the same spot here.
Right.
You hold the same position. But we recognize that conflict sells.
Yep.
We recognize that, again, our brains even have a bent towards negativity at times. And so I just have to be careful, like, how much of that dose am I just putting into my life on a day-to-day basis? Because otherwise it begins to distort my viewpoints. It distorts my language. It distorts my tone. And so that's something we got to be careful. Again, not just always how we get out of conflict. How do we resolve conflict? But how do we avoid it?
Well, that's why I've had to take breaks at times from talk radio, from different things, to be like, look, I know that I'm getting to an unhealthy place with this, and it's kind of taking over my mind. And I'll have conversations with my dad. That's where I vent, and he vents, and we agree on issues, and we go back and forth. And we were talking last night on the phone, and he said he was talking about school shootings and stuff, and he was talking about having the church ready for security and all this, and he said, he wants to get them trained, but as he was talking out loud, I had to say, Daddy, please don't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's good to have someone in your life that's stepping in and going, well, that's probably not the healthy direction to take this.
Right.
Maybe we need to take a step back and take a break. So have people in your lives, but also be able to look in the mirror and go, I'm getting to a disagreeable place where that's all my life's about.
And I think making a conscious decision at times too, to say, hey, listen, I'm going to talk about something else with these people, because you know what we'd experience in that? We begin to experience, hey, there's some things we actually have in common here.
Imagine that.
I actually find this person to be somewhat likable, and on the things we have disagreement with, we work through those better when we see those other things we have in common.
Yep.
We'll be back.
We're gonna rock down to Electric Highway.
So today, Jason and I are talking about disagreeing, which is
I disagree with that.
Which is why we only talk during this hour, and we don't talk any other time.
I will not accept this tone from you.
I will not. Yeah, and so tone's an interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've been told that I'm not great on the phone because I don't enjoy talking on the phone.
Yeah.
And I've been told that by staff at Hope. Like when I talk to them on the phone, they say, "You sound unhappy." What? And I was like, "Well, I'm not unhappy. I just don't like talking on the phone."
I recorded a video for our people to talk about some of the schedule change yesterday. And Holly Kirtley, our creative director, informed me afterwards, "You don't really have to yell. Like you're talking to the camera." Yeah. As if I wasn't so much angry, just it was just loud.
Yeah, like loud talker.
Like you're talking as if you're in front of a room of 500 people. It's just us and the camera.
Yeah, you talk normal. We have microphones that amplify.
So let's say through any number of circumstances, whether it's through carelessness, whether it is through something that was even malicious, something that unintentional or intentional. Sure. We've somehow found ourselves in conflict with another person. How do we go upon restoring that friendship? You know, or what responsibility do we have, if at any? You know, in what context is restoration appropriate? In what context do we say, just let it go? I mean, what are your thoughts on kind of the next steps?
Yeah, I think in current society we have we've taken everything to text. We've taken everything to social media. So we're in comment threads, and that's where the arguments happen and the frustrations happen. I would say get back to a place where you're looking someone in the eye and having an actual conversation. We're less likely to be so openly disagreeable if we're in those situations. But also that gives you a chance to actually look at someone, and then you don't have to read into what they text you, read into that comment of what's their posture, where's this coming from, but you can actually look at them and know, okay, this is where it's at. I would encourage you to actually have conversations with people. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think we see some really biblical instruction here.
Right.
You know, let us not start in the public forum on a personal issue. And I don't have to go and represent the masses. I don't have to go and say, "Hey, Andrew, I disagree with you on behalf of everyone else that has my opinion." You know, I don't think that's necessary. Now, also, I would say this: I don't think that some apology or some personal conversation is always required when you simply just have a difference of opinion.
Right.
It is okay for people to have differences of opinion.
Absolutely.
And it not have to be reconciled.
Yeah.
Especially on really tertiary things. Yeah. Reconciliation is not required there. But when conflict has turned into malice, or has turned into slander, or has turned into something that's hurtful or grievous, those are the moments that we have to sit down face to face with someone and we need to say, "I'm going to start here." And I would often start with a personal, you know, it's one thing I try to do if I'm going to sit down with someone. I want to talk to you. I don't feel like we're where we need to be. And I want to start by assessing that I've probably done this. You know, you don't lead with someone's,
you're terrible.
You don't lead with someone's grievances or your grievances against someone else. You lead with a posture of humility and say, "The goal is not for me to correct you, rebuke you. The goal is for us to experience health and for us to experience both more of Jesus and for people around us to experience more of Jesus. And if something's happened that's diluting that a bit, that's when we need to step in."
I saw a great thing happen last night on Twitter, of all places. John Stone Street wrote an article about Rachel Held Evans. And I thought it was an okay article. Well, it got back to him that her family, it created more hurt. Mm. And he tweeted last night. He didn't say if I offended. He tweeted, I just found out that my article compounded the hurt of this family. I have taken it down and I apologize. There was no preface. There was no, we disagree on things. He just said, I'm sorry.
I've done something.
This clearly offended you.
Right.
And I'm sorry. And I'm gonna seek to fix that.
Right.
And that's a great model. That's a biblical model. And it's not easy. But I would encourage you to try to put that in your life. And we'll talk more next week.